9 on LZ on 710 ESPN. Clint Yates joins us here now of the undefeated and around the horn, friend of the program. Welcome, Clinton. We wanted to ask you right out of the gate. We were just discussing during the break this Clippers Mavericks matchup, and you already heard, LZ. I told LZ that Paul George would be guarding Kristaps Porzingis, and so far so good as the Clippers jump out 10-0 and Kristaps Porzingis has missed three shots. What do you make of the duo? LZ, you asked the question the way you asked me. Ask Clinton the question the way you asked me about those two duos.
Well, first of all, Porzingis is avoiding the paint like it has the COVID. I'm going to need him to man up and get his ass in the box. Now, the question I had, though, is the gap between Porzingis, who is making me look foolish right now, and Luka Doncic. How big of it is the gap between those two and the duo of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard?
Much bigger. I mean, that seems obvious to me. I mean, Luka Doncic
much bigger than what?
Well,
the gap between the two Mavs players is much larger than the gap between the two Clippers players. That's what I'm saying.
Correct. Well, no, what he's saying is the duos. You asked me, is the gap between the two duos sizable or small?
Sizable is the word I would use.
Yes.
But the reason why I would use the word sizable is also because the top side of the Clippers duo is much higher than I think the top side of the Mavs duo. So, like, while the Mavs duo and the Clippers duo in a, for lack of a better term, static state might be relatively normal when they really get to move in, especially if they're facing off against each other, I think that that's going to show that George and Kawhi are much better in my opinion. Especially for a playoff series where you're playing the same opponent four or five times in a row. That's the key here.
Well, I would have thought for sure Porzingis would have gone to the paint by now. It's been 10 minutes. I'm exhausted.
Oh, don't even ask Rick Carlisle that. He'll get mad at you, man. He will snap back at you. He does not like that question. So anyway, Clinton, as far as Lakers-Blazers, we've been talking about it obviously all day today and, you know, the big matchup tomorrow. Look, I think that backcourt is great, okay? They're fantastic. There's no question. There's nobody on that roster that can guard AD and LeBron. And I just think that, as we're talking about duos, right, I think that there is a sizable difference between those duos as well. And for as much hype as the Blazers are getting, I'd be stunned if this series goes more than six. Where are you on this series?
Is that like a hot take pick? I'd be stunned if it goes more than six. There's only one.
No, it's not. I don't think it's a hot take. But there's a lot of people picking the Blazers, which is crazy to me.
Okay, so here's. I don't think that's that crazy, but I do ask this question, particularly of Lakers fans, which is, again, expectation management in this series is going to be major. Zach Collins is out tomorrow night, so he's not playing, so that's a factor. But overall, like, are Lakers fans going to be satisfied with, I don't know, four less than double-digit wins? You know, is it going to be a situation where if you don't blow the Blazers out, then something is eminently wrong and we're bringing out the worry machine? I really do think about that because I don't think it's that ridiculous to say that the Blazers are good. I mean, this is a team that was in the Western Conference Finals not that long ago, decimated by injuries. There is some element of knowing how to win that's still there with the Blazers that's important in the playoffs. I don't think they're more talented than the Lakers by any stretch of the imagination. But this squad has done a couple things together, so they know how to do it. And that, to me, is the largest factor here, well, more so than just the duos. They got an idea of how to get it done, and I think that they probably can get one or two, but I don't know that that's even going to be satisfactory for a lot of Lakers fans who expect them to just blow everybody out of the building. That's not really how it's going to happen.
I don't know. I mean, my sense is that people have a healthy respect for the Blazers because they know what Dame is. They know who he is. They know what he's capable of, and they've seen it recently in real time. We were having a very special evening, and Dame says, "Damn your evening, I'm here to ball," and almost dropped 50 on us. So we've seen it in real time. We know what he can do. I just think that people are mistaking respect for hype. I think what you're hearing, George, is a great deal of respect for the Portland Trailblazers and what they are and what they can do, not hype. Because a team that just went to the Western Conference Final last year, and only reason why they're in the playoff seating that they're in right now is because of injuries. When that team gets healthy, they should be respected because they've done nothing to lose that respect.
Right. I totally agree. I mean, I also think that I'm not, for me, it's not just about being so-called afraid of Dame Lillard. It's about being afraid of the Blazers. This is what I'm saying. This is a complete team in a way that they haven't been in a while, just to LZ's point. So the Blazers obviously are led by Dame, but I don't think that that's a situation where you all of a sudden say, well, I mean, that's the only thing that's happening with them. They've got a squad they put together. Melo's finally figures a couple things out. Jokic is back. I mentioned Zach Collins earlier. Let's not forget Whiteside, who can block a lot of shots. Didn't he lead the league in block shots? Anyway, they don't play defense, but they can certainly fill it up. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if they got a couple games.
They don't play defense. They actually don't rebound well for as many bigs as they have. And again, like CJ McCollum needs a bacchiotomy. The dude is playing with a broken back out there, okay? Like,
and
at
they
some
still
point,
can't stop him. And they still right. can't stop him, baby.
I mean, ooh, people have stopped him in the bubble. He's had three good games, and he's had three games. So let's not make it seem like he's out there just, like, being Dame Jr. or something, you know?
George, weren't you way out on a limb, though, with some ridiculous Blazers prediction beforehand that there was no chance they were going to win? I believe I was listening to that prediction at a different time slot when this show was on. So I just want to keep you
honest.
Well,
I don't
–
no, I don't think that – well, I don't think the Blazers – no, my thing was I picked the Blazers to win the 8 seed, which I got right. But I said there's no chance they're beating the Lakers.
Got it. Okay. Just making sure that I had that, you know, stacked up straight, Laura.
Listen, I got made fun of on the jump when I said that they would make up all that stretch and take over the 8 seed. And
yeah,
then
they did.
Who made fun of you?
I got clowned by whoever was on set with me that day. Or not on set, on Zoom. Maybe it was Paul Pierce. I don't know. I don't want to slander anyone because I don't remember. But I remember everybody looking at me like I was crazy. It might have been windy. I don't know. But either way, I ain't slandering anybody. So
I
got
three
the Blazers.
Days. You're not gonna slander anybody? Come on,
dog. Clearly, that's the whole joke. It might have been Kendrick Perkins while I'm at it. So anyway, but yeah, I don't see their look. Jeff Van Gundy is even stronger than me. He says there's a better chance the Blazers get swept than actually winning this series.
Wow. I mean. I'm not really sure I understand that analysis. I really agree with that.
I think you can have four very close games, even have one or two going to overtime, and still get swept.
I see. Okay. Okay, that's fair. That actually makes a lot of sense. And that's what I was – that gets back to my point earlier, LZ, which is that going to be a sweep that is satisfactory to Lakers fans? You know, we have doom and gloom every time there aren't three starters that have double digits in the first half. It seems like we're taking calls with Sliwa all night long about why nobody can fill it up. If they squeak by, in a lot of people's minds, the Blazers, is that going to all of a sudden turn the panic button on it? I don't think it should. And that's kind of what my larger point here is.
No, we
this
agree.
Is a situation where however you get by the Blazers is a good thing, ultimately, for the team in terms of cohesion and in terms of obviously advancing. So, yeah, I mean, the Blazers are a worthy opponent, for sure.
They're a worthy opponent, but LeBron James has never lost in the first round of the playoffs.
Right.
And there's a reason for it. He's really, really good.
Yeah.
He's really, really good. And he's not just really, really good just in and of himself. He makes those around him better than what they are. Imagine taking a top five player and making him better than what he already is. That's what we're about to see. We're going to see playoff AD. We're going to see playoff Kuz. We're going to see a playoff squad do things that they didn't do in the regular season. But that still doesn't mean that the Blazers aren't going to be tough. That's not fear, or that's not trying to have it both ways. That's respecting a team that has only really lost to the Golden State Warriors in the last four or five postseasons, and was just in the Western Conference Final a year ago. It's respect.
Clinton, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you here before we let you go about the Washington football team's hire of Jason Wright, their first the first black president in the NFL. Let alone the team and that particular franchise. What do you make of that particular hire?
There's a face I'm making that black folks make when people do things that they think that they should be impressed with. That they don't say anything that LZ knows. That I'm
oh, my God,
right
I'm making that face, too. I'm making that face right now.
Last team in the NFL to integrate on the field. Team requires a complete bombshell of a situation story in order to simply get the name changed. You hire a brother who happens to be a lawyer who works in this kind of world. I don't know if you guys know what people who work in those jobs are like in D.C. And I'm this is no knock on Wright because he is a sublime individual from a football standpoint and otherwise. But as far as what the business acumen is and all that, a lot of those people are the same, black or not. You know what I mean? When you're working in that type of a field. So I am of the opinion, frankly, that anybody that Dan Snyder trusts is probably not somebody whom I'm going to trust. And how I'm going to extrapolate that is to say that this was the NFL's doing as much as anything. And don't be surprised if there's some extra steps to go along with that in terms of who's running the show there. I mean, this is not the kind of person that Dan would have ever hired on his own. Flatly and period. And just because it happened, it doesn't mean that I believe in him anymore. It certainly doesn't mean that I think that anything is going to go right. Reminder, he just sued somebody. That would be Daniel M. Snyder last week. Okay, so, you know, it's peak Ashburnistan per usual, and they can't even figure out what's going on with their starting quarterback situation because the owner is playing favorites. So, you know, yeah, I'm sitting on my porch. My door is open. My screen door, however, is closed.
There he is, Clinton Yates of The Undefeated. Follow him on Twitter at Clinton Yates. You're the best, brother. Thank you so much for the time, as
always.
See
you guys later. Congrats again on the new time slot. Love it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bye. Appreciate it. All right, coming up next, we got to talk about the Dodgers and how impressive they've been. We did not give them their just due early on, and we will tell you how impressive they've been. I mean, they're on a historic-type pace at the moment, and there needs to be a serious conversation about who the best player in the sport is this particular season, and it includes one Los Angeles Dodger. We'll get to that in just a second. Sedano and LZ with you here on 710 ESPN. We've had a lot of discussions today. A lot of NBA. Thanks to Clint Yates for joining us and Mark Spears for joining us earlier as well. Lindsay Theory talks of football with us. If you missed any part of the show, subscribe to the podcast on the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts. So feel free to find it there. You missed anything, including our conversation about TVs in the bedroom, the best chicken
Among
sandwiches
other things.
In LA, and yeah, a million other things. LZ's now fearful of going in an Uber, right?
That movie commercial is scary, George.
It is scary. It is scary.
You need to respect the officers. I mean, yeah. Do you eat in your bed?
I don't do it like as an adult, no. But as a kid, I definitely did.
Huh.
Why
so I
do
should
you?
Stop? So I should stop?
Oh, so you say, because you do.
Well, I was just seeing what else we had in common, but I see the food in the bed is not one of them.
Yeah, well, we know. Laura, say what you just said. Go ahead.
I said, we know Greg definitely eats in his bed.
Yeah.
Greg,
is that
do you eat in your bed?
Not anymore. Not since I got out of the bed and I'm no longer the grandpa from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I don't believe that.
Well, how else did you gain your 25 pounds if you weren't eating in bed? What were you doing?
Well, I was eating in bed and I wasn't getting out of bed. I would do the show from the bed. Okay. It was not a good situation.
Okay. So is your eating in bed like I'm just having like some snacks watching TV? Or is it like I'm eating dinner in bed?
No TV, remember?
No, I would eat lunch. I would eat lunch in bed because the show would end at noon, and then I would eat lunch in bed right afterward. And then I probably would just stay there doing work for another couple hours. It wasn't good.
Yeah, no.
You just stayed in bed and ate like a sub sandwich?
I mean, it would be like ramen, but yeah.
That's disgusting.
I mean, yeah, I'm with you. Like, I don't.
It is, and I don't do it anymore, thankfully, because Laura and George both shamed me into going out and doing.
We did shame you. We shamed you into exercising, and it worked because you've lost how much weight?
15 pounds. Baby.
There you go. So there you go. So the shaming worked. Yes, normally, I'm not into body shaming, but for you, I've known you too long to not be able to body shame you.
Look, I appreciate.
I feel like
it.
There's a
Thank
caveat
you.
There.
Do it again if I need it.
Yeah. But yeah, eating in your bed is gross.
That's cruel. I mean, the way he eats it, like, for me, it's like maybe a handful of, like, almonds.
Okay.
You know, maybe a protein bar or something like that.
Yeah, okay. I can let you pass on that.
Yeah, but he's talking about a meal, like a designated time-slotted meal.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a quesadilla, you know.
You're eating cheese in bed?
Peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
That is disgusting.
Peanut butter and jelly? That getting messy, too.
That is gross.
Look, it doesn't happen anymore.
Okay.
Let's talk about the future.
George, why does he keep saying it doesn't happen anymore? Like he was 30 years ago. He stopped last week.
Yeah, it was like a month ago. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
look, what's been going on this year has been 30 years. We have been inside for 30 years.
Do we just qualify it under pandemic rules?
Yes.
There are no rules, right?
No. I'm not letting him blame the Rona because he's eating bacon in bed. I'm not doing that. That's a character flaw. That has nothing to do with Corona.
Yeah. Bacon is delicious.
There's only certain things you can eat in bed have kind of food in bed, like whipped cream, ice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Strawberries.
Yeah.
Okay, girl. I see what you're saying.
Is it dairy-free whipped cream? Just curious for the vegans in the house.
Right, and the sure. lactose intolerant.
We can do dairy-free.
Exactly.
Well,
I like
listen,
this show.
I don't know if any of the Dodgers are lactose intolerant, but man, they are performing in bed and performing at bat. I said in bed because we've been talking about the damn bed for so long. Maybe they're performing in bed too. I don't know. I hope so for their sake. But anyway, Mookie Betts, LZ. Look, I understand that Mike Trout is the best player. Okay, he has the resume. You know, baseball is a weird sport. One player doesn't change the dynamics of a season like that, particularly not even an everyday player, right? It's just the way the sport works. 25 guys on the roster, right? Like, it's hard for one guy to make that kind of difference. But we can definitely look at his individual talent and say that. But in this particular season, man, Mookie Betts has been really impressive. He is second in home runs, tied with Mike Trout. And the stat that Greg gave us earlier, which is from Sarah Langs on Twitter, she does a great job covering Major League Baseball. Mookie Betts has a 99% contact rate against pitches in the strike zone this season. He has taken 101 swings at pitches in the strike zone, and he has made contact on 100 of them. All but one pitch. That is unbelievably ridiculous. It is unprecedented. It also goes to show you how good a player the Dodgers signed to their team, and how there's a reason that Andrew Friedman, who you and I, LZ, had these conversations in the morning, right? Yeah. Oh, when's he going to sign the big fish? You know, he trades for Manny Machado. Is Manny going to be the guy? Nope, he's not the guy. He waited for the right guy, and good Lord, has he picked the right guy.
Yeah, it was the right combination. Like, he tried to get Bryce Harper, but he wasn't trying to be married to him for like 10 years. He was like, I'm going to give you like this 4 or 5 year deal, and we're going to, you know, check on the get back and see how we still stand. But he didn't need to do that with Mookie, because Mookie has already shown him who he is and what he's all about. And to your point, George, and I don't know if I'm putting words in your mouth, so I'm just going to say it. He is the best player in baseball. When you add in everything else, I'm not going to sit here and give baseball rules that I don't have for all the other sports that we talk about and cover. And I know that it's not all of his fault, but the Angels have played 21, 22 games and their season's already over.
Yeah, it's over. Yeah.
The season's already over. Yep. How can you be the best player in the game when you can't even make it to the halfway point? Like, so I understand it's not all his fault. Trust me, listeners. I get it. But we wouldn't call someone on an awful team the best player in the game in any other sport. We wouldn't do that for any quarterback.
Yeah. In baseball, we've done it, though. Alex Rodriguez won an MVP on the Texas Rangers, and they were the worst team in their division. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
that was garbage.
Right.
That was garbage. He had a bunch of numbers that we now see may have been assisted. And so we just fell in love with the stats, but we didn't pay attention to the most important stats. Wins and losses. When do those hits come? When do those home runs come? And why aren't they coming in the postseason, let alone just in critical moments in the regular season? I get it. Mike Trout is a fantastic player, and if there was an opportunity to get him with the Dodgers, I would want to sign on absolutely right away, no questions asked. But if the point of this conversation is about identifying the best player, I'm not choosing a team that's already been eliminated from the playoffs before we get to the halfway point when Mookie Betts is doing the damn thing, and he's going to probably get to the World Series.
Yeah,
you don't
look,
do that for any other sport.
Yeah, no, you're right. It is interesting, but that is the way baseball works, because it's basically baseball, and maybe I've said this to you before, it's an individual sport masqueraded in a team sport. You know what I mean? Like, that masquerades itself as a team sport.
Yeah, listen, I understand. I'm sure some people, especially people in Anaheim, going to kill me. How can you say that Mike Trout's not better than Mookie Betts? Do you know his numbers are on par with this, and his numbers are here, and his
yeah,
numbers
he,
are there,
he, he's today's Mickey Mantle. That's what he is,
yeah,
Mike Trout.
Yeah, I get all that. Yeah. I get all that. And he's going to the Hall of Fame. He can start right now going to the Hall of Fame. He's got all the money. He's got all the accolades. He's got everything except for the chip. And you know who we talk about when the players aren't playing the chips? Am I right or wrong? We don't talk about game 184. We don't talk about game 112. We don't talk about game, 50. No, we talk about chips, playoffs. What did you do in October? You don't get called Mr. June.
Yeah, no, you get called Mr. October, or in Derek Jeter's case, Mr. November in one particular postseason.
Yeah.
But anyway, but just to give you an idea before we go to break, and coming up next, John Gruden, Raider fans, is doing that thing that he does. I wish Keyshawn was on right now so he could just sit here and rail about John Gruden with you and me, LZ, because I feel like he'd have a lot to say about this. But we will get to John Gruden and the games that he's playing with his quarterbacks in a second. But just to wrap up the Dodgers segment, the Dodgers right now, coming into today, number one in Major League Baseball in run differential, wins, team ERA, team relief ERA, home runs, RBIs, runs scored. It is absolutely incredible what they've been able to do here over the last couple of weeks. So hopefully, as to your point, it leads to a World Series, which is really the one thing that everyone here wants. But coming up next, we'll get to John Gruden playing head games with his quarterbacks. Oh, Adictiva. Laura brought the tunes from the 10 a.m. show.
I like that.
Yeah. Sedano and LZ with you here on 710 ESPN. Alan Sliwa going to join us in a little bit for Lakers talk. We'll do a little crosstalk with Alan.
I think I want my new nickname to be Whipped Cream, George.
Well, people are wondering if Mysterio will make an appearance because of all the whipped cream and strawberries talk in that last segment. So.
I mean, we barely got started, and it's already, Amanda's not going to be very happy with us.
We don't mess around. We cut straight to the chase.
I like that.
Yeah. Speaking of cutting straight to the chase, I do like when people admit that maybe they got something wrong. I know I'm not necessarily one of those people all the time. I've gotten better at it over the years, though, LZ, since you and I work together. But Jason Derulo, clearly I'm sure you're familiar with him, singer.
What did he do wrong?
He said he thought when he was in the movie Cats that movie would change the world. I don't know, man. Like, you know how sometimes you see a movie, like you just see the trailer and you're like, man, that movie's gonna be great. Like the Nolan movie that Tenet, right? That keeps getting pushed back. That Christopher Nolan's like, nah, I ain't releasing it until I can put it in theaters. Like I watched that movie or the trailer of that movie, and I'm like, all right, I'm good. Like I know that movie is gonna be really good. With John David Washington and Christopher Nolan directing. But I saw the commercial for Cats. I'll never forget. I saw that commercial. And I couldn't stop laughing, like howling of laughter. Because I'm like, who in their right mind is going to watch this movie? It looks utterly ridiculous. And, yeah, it turned out nobody watched the movie. So how can I see that? And Jason Derulo, who acted in the movie, not see that from a mile away?
Sorry about that, George. I dropped. Apparently, in the afternoon, other people use the internet. Maybe I need a room like Greg or something.
My
own little room. Listen, anytime an actor or a person who's in a film suggests that their project is going to change the world, I immediately tune out anyway. I immediately tune out. Because if the world didn't change after Infinity War, then it's not going to change at all.
Right.
It's not going to change at all. Avengers Infinity War was an earth-changing move, and yet we didn't really move that differently.
Yeah.
So after that, I just figured, there is no movie that's going to change the world. And Jason, dog, you can't change the world if you dress up like a cat anyway. we've already discussed that cats are for pet owners that really don't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
Like they want to look like they're caring for something, but they really don't want to care for something because if they did, they would actually get an actual pet that needed them and not an animal that despises their presence.
Since you mentioned the Marvel movies, were you mad at LaShawn McCoy when he spoiled the end, Avengers Endgame, the end of the movie?
No. Were there people that were mad?
Oh, man, people were hot.
Are you kidding? I was pissed. I was
Greg
so
Bergman
mad.
Greg Bergman was so mad.
I was so mad what he did. He ruined the movie for me. He ruined it.
Ruined the
great
movie for you?
It was still great, but I went in. I already knew. I'm sitting there watching the movie saying, like, all right, so when's he going to go? When's he going to die? Oh, is this going to be the scene where he dies? Oh, this is going to be the scene where he dies. He was messed up. He screwed up.
All right, so here, let me ask you this. Did Shady call you up on the phone?
No, he shouldn't have tweeted it. I follow him on Twitter.
Did he text you?
Oh, no, don't try and give him, like, some kind of credit.
I'm just asking questions. Did he text you?
No, he did not text me.
Okay. So you followed him, and he took you somewhere you didn't want to go, and now you're mad at him, even though you followed him.
That movie came out that day. He saw an early, he had a, watched an early version of it before, and most people did. I was getting to it that night.
Yeah.
That was way too early.
He's also on the East Coast. Spoilers. He's got the advantage on you too. But you should probably stay off the internet that day.
You should stay off the internet. Exactly. Yeah, That's my point.
I work in radio. I work in sports radio. I need Twitter. I didn't go on Twitter.
Well, you could mute. You could have muted Avengers Endgame or something. You know.
If you weren't so busy eating that bologna sandwich in bed, you could have done that.
Exactly.
No bologna.
Speaking of bologna, Greg, I'm glad you're here because your boy John Gruden. LZ, I don't know if you know this. Greg has some alter egos. Like, you have Mysterio. He has Laker Boy, Dodger Boy, and Laker Boy, Dodger Boy, and Raider Boy. None as interesting, and Bruin Boy, that's right. None as interesting as Mysterio, but yet funny nonetheless in different ways. Greg is the guy that thinks the Raiders are going 16-0 every season. So, Greg, I'm gonna start with you. What do you make of your boy John Gruden already playing head games with your very sensitive quarterback Derek Carr, who blocks everyone on Twitter, as we found out from Kirk Morrison a couple weeks ago? that John Gruden is out there telling people, raving about Marcus Mariota. He's out there telling people that Marcus Mariota looks fantastic. Oh, my God. I mean, when he gets out there and, you know, he's on the run and he can throw on the run and the stuff he's doing is incredible. You know, he's been injured and it's just good to see him back being Marcus Mariota again. What do you think that does for your team and the guy who's supposed to be your starting quarterback?
See, so I'm going to say something that you tell me all the time. You got to know who you're working with. Sometimes you got to pat people on the butt, and sometimes you got to get down their throat. And this is one of those times I got to trust that John Gruden knows what type of guy Derek Carr is, and this will push him to be better, and he's going to go 16-0. Super Bowl
champion. Why? Why do you have to trust that?
Because I believe John Gruden.
We have no evidence. We have no evidence. None whatsoever to support what you just said.
Well, they were much better last year than they were the year before. They've gotten better each year. They traded away guys in Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack, and have gotten better because of it, because they brought more guys in. Their defense is much better than it has been. Their offense is humming along right now. I actually think this is going to be one of the better years for the Raiders, and that's not even being Raider Boy. That's just truth.
No, that's pure Raider Boy, what I just heard.
No, absolutely not. What team is better in the NFC or the AFC West besides the Chiefs?
Okay, let's pull back and let's first talk about your synopsis of the John Gruden impact on your franchise.
Right, you have a sensitive quarterback. We know this.
Yes, and you made him sound like he was Sean McVay. Sean McVay is actually the person who parachuted into a terrible situation and made them significantly better in a short period of time. John Gruden has not done that. He's done some stuff. And as a Detroit Lions fan, I recognize the difference between, you know, hamster wheel trotting and actually movement. You guys have been trotting on a hamster wheel. Have you not?
I mean, yeah, it hasn't been the best year. I mean, I see 16-0 every year, but they don't actually do that.
And I see 0-16 every year, and the Lions don't actually do that. They did accomplish that once, though.
They did do that. But like, what the team that you're having here with the Raiders is going to be much better. Their offensive line is very good, and it's just going to get better. Derek Carr has actually been a good quarterback last year. He had good yards, had good completion percentage. You have Josh Jacobs in the backfield. That's a good running back, one of the best young running backs in the league. Plus, you have more speed now on the outside to keep up with teams like Kansas City. This team is going to be better, and their defense is much better than it has been.
I just don't believe you can have a winning franchise if the leadership of the organization is constantly harassing the most important piece to that success.
I don't think that that's a healthy environment, man. Like, I don't think that that's smart. And to your point, Greg, know your personnel, right? KYP. If you know your homeboy is sensitive in Derek Carr, that's not going to make things better. You know what I mean? Like, that's actually the opposite of what I tell you all the time.
Right, but I mean, he may know that the Derek Carr may be that way on Twitter and with people outside, but how he is with John Gruden may be two totally different things.
All right.
Well, so John Gruden pushing him like that may actually help him. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Let's see what happens.
There's a way to push, though, right? Yeah. Like, and this is like a larger question. Like when you do things, whether you're a player or a coach, in public, you're not trying to solve the problem. You're not, because you're inviting too much of external voices to get engaged to derail the entire process. If you're sincerely trying to solve the problem, we don't hear about it. But when you're running to the microphone, Jerry Jones, and talking about what's going on, then you're not really helping. You're making things worse, because then we got to go and ask Dak, how come you don't have your money yet, dog? Like, we got to do stuff like that, which makes the situation worse. So when you're picking on Carr by not talking glowingly about him and then suggesting that Marcus Mariota is going to be your new QB, but you won't get off the pot, you're just going to keep doing this to both guys, that's not creating an environment of trust. And if the coach and the QB can't trust each other, what do you have?
He's talking to you, Raider boy.
No, he's talking. We've got to go to break here soon. But no, like,
I mean,
I was letting you go so we can go to break. So you can
all of a sudden, you got nothing to say, Raider boy. Interesting how that works. All right, we will take a break. It's time for Crosstalk with Alan Sliwa. Laker talk is coming up after us. We're back in 2 minutes. Sit down on LZ with you here. Time for Crosstalk. Lakers talk coming on after us. Alan Sliwa is your host for Lakers talk. Alan Sliwa, how excited are you that the playoffs have begun? Like, what is happening at the Sliwa household today, as it has been wall-to-wall basketball since 10:30 in the morning?
Not eating in bed. I'm with you guys on that one. Definitely not.
It's just disgusting.
Yeah, knocking down, you know, a three-course Indian curry and all that. That's not happening in bed. But there has been fantastic basketball. George, this whole, you know, these last couple of weeks, I mean, I know the playing games, the restart games really didn't mean anything for the Lakers, the Bucks. Both those teams go 3-5. But the quality of basketball is good. You know, I don't think if there was a question before of what happens with 4.5 months of no basketball and then you come back, is the quality going to be there? Yes, there's some teams and some players that don't look crisp, but it's been good basketball, and today's been no different. Obviously, tomorrow, Lakers in Portland. I'm excited to get basketball back. I'm sure a lot of LA is.
Well, I think you're wrong.
Thank you.
I do believe that we did have a trash game versus the Nets versus Toronto, but it was just interesting enough so that we had to watch the result, but then it went back to being trash again. But by then we had to watch the third quarter. So,
well, you can't, LZ, we can't expect every series to be good. That's going to be one of those series that, especially in the East, by the time you get to the second round, I think there'll be some really good quality basketball. But there are a couple teams in there that definitely doesn't make the mix. You guys seen the score of this Dallas Clippers game?
Well, Dallas has been on a 13-0 run. Yeah, Dallas on a 13-0 run, and it's 50-36 right now. Luka and company have been really, really good after getting destroyed in the first few minutes of the game.
Yeah, this is by the way, I don't know how you guys feel about this series. I'm just from the hater side of me. I'd like to see Dallas beat the Clippers, but I feel like Dallas has no shot. So this is completely shocking to me to see them up this much. And I know it's just game one, but I think George, you just answered the question. You don't think Dallas has any shot against the Clippers?
No,
yeah, I don't either.
I think that this is a 5-game series. I think that the Clippers will probably still come back and win tonight. So I mean, right now they're already down just 10. They've gone, you know, hit 2 buckets in a row. So like in the NBA nowadays with the three ball, and the Clippers are so good at the three ball as a collective, that you can get back from a 14-15 point deficit in just a few minutes. And, you know, LZ's boy Porzingis just got stuffed at the rim right now by a smaller guy, LZ, so I know you're not going to be happy about that. So, yeah, I just still think that ultimately the Clippers are going to win this fairly easy. It's just like I feel about the Lakers and Blazers, Alan. Like, I was having this conversation with LZ. I think it's probably a 5-game, maybe 6-game series. I think that individual games can be competitive, but I'm not buying that either of these two teams, Dallas or Portland, can actually push it to the brink at 7, let alone win the series.
Well, the Blazers-Lakers is a interesting series because you actually have, you know, it's not common that you're number 8 in the Western Conference, just number 8 in general, has as much talent as the Blazers do. But I do think there's, I mean, an incredible amount of hype that the 3-5 record Lakers had in this restart, where really none of the games were meaningful compared to the Blazers, who for 9 games were in the postseason, we're taking that, you know, this small sample size of completely, you know, different motivation from both franchises. I think we're hyping up the Blazers, you know, way too much, and I think we're kind of pushing the Lakers down. When I say we, I'm just talking about just media in general. I don't know if you guys feel the same way.
I feel the same way that you do. Now, LZ, I don't believe feels that way.
Listen, I think that there is some conflation happening between respect and hype.
Okay.
I think something that's not real is hyped, but something that is real, you're just giving it its respect.
Mm-hmm.
The Blazers are real. They're a real good team. They were just in the Western Conference Finals last year. They're in this position only because of injuries, not because of play, but because of injuries. They got healthy during the quarantine, and now they look like the number three seeded team again that was in the Western Conference Finals. So thinking that they have a chance of beating a squad that just got put together in a franchise that hasn't been to the playoffs in 7 years, I don't think it's that crazy. I mean, I don't think the Portland Trailblazers have enough to beat them, but I certainly do believe that the Portland Trailblazers have enough to make this a very competitive series.
But LZ, just to play off that, you know, you're talking about the respect part of it. If the Blazers took the Lakers 6 games, I think that's showing respect. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking about the two of the best five players in the world. Like, that is the difference. It's nothing that Portland will have done wrong. It's nothing that if Portland, for example, and I agree, that's not an 8 seed, but just the circumstances made him an 8 seed. Let's say they should be in the mix with where Denver is and Utah and Houston. That's probably if the season started today, that's probably where they would be after 82 games. They just happen to, you know, face the Lakers, who are the number one seed, and it's almost unfortunate for the Blazers and almost unfortunate for the Lakers in that sense.
Yeah, for sure. I think that both teams, that is a great way of putting it. By the way, the Clippers just went on a 9-0 run, and it's just a 5-point game all of a sudden again. So it does happen just that quickly. But yeah, to your point, Alan, look, man, Damian Lillard is fantastic. I think that you can make the argument he's one of the greatest leaders we have in the NBA today, okay? I don't think that there's any doubt about that. He's gotten Hassan Whiteside to be focused, which hasn't happened all that often in his career, okay? Now, he's not as good as Jusuf Nurkic and you know, whatever. So now you're seeing a lot more of Nurkic. But think about it. He has been able to carry them on his back, both literally and figuratively, to an 8 seed when most people thought at best they could be in the play-in game. So you're right. They deserve, and LZ, to your point, they do deserve respect. But I think that what happens is there's a tipping point where you go from respect into hype. And I think that we've seen that transform itself because people are trying to extrapolate what the Lakers did in the bubble versus what Portland is doing in the bubble.
But hold on. Let me just say one more sentence.
The thing is that going into the bubble, teams had different philosophies going into the bubble. The Lakers just had to win the one game, basically, or 2 games or whatever it was, to clinch the overall 1 seed. And then after that, they were going to experiment. Whereas the Blazers were literally playing for their lives in there.
No, I agree with you 100% that the Lakers didn't go in there with the intent of going 8-0. I get that, though. The missed shots weren't because they weren't trying. They were trying. They just couldn't go knock them down for whatever reasons. But I think there is a question of who. Who are these voices that are hyping up the Blazers to the point in which they are toppling the Lakers? Because I would argue, George, that a lot of these voices that are housing or occupying significant spaces in the media are haters anyway. And they're looking for reasons to hate on the Lakers. They're looking for reasons to hate on LeBron James. They're looking for reasons to hate on just the idea that, you know, this guy can come from the Eastern Conference, parachute in, and then within 2 years win a championship. After we've said countless times he can only do it in the East, they hate the fact that he's on the verge of doing it in the West. And so they say these ridiculous things because they can't accept the truth, because part of accepting the truth is admitting that they were wrong. I remember the clip from our very own show here at the network, The Jump, and the people that were saying things about how long it was going to take AD and LeBron James to mesh. And I just sat there shaking my head going, have you not met LeBron damn James?
Right.
Why would you say that?
LZ, the beauty is this. The beauty, and I think there is, you know, there was too much made of the Lakers going 3-5 and too much made of the Blazers, like we mentioned, over the nine games. The beauty is starting tomorrow, Lakers got something to prove as well, because, yes, they didn't look good. I mean, we got a chance to watch every game. You hear the broadcast. It's not like the Lakers came out and would pick and choose when they wanted to win and lose. There were games they were trying to win that they lost, and there were games they just didn't look good, and by the second half, they're like, okay, well, this game isn't important. So I don't disagree that Lakers don't have something coming into this series where they are going to have to. I've kind of made the argument that playing Blazers in the first round might be actually advantageous for the Lakers, may wake them up a little bit, may force them to say, okay, guys, let's go.
Yeah.
And maybe that wasn't going to happen against Memphis, George, but it's certainly going to happen against the Blazers, and tomorrow they'll have that. You know?
They could have sleptwalk through that series against Memphis or New Orleans or basically anyone else that would have come out of that play-in scenario other than the Blazers. With the Blazers, they will have a renewed focus. They understand what Damian Lillard is capable of and what that team is capable of for all the reasons we've outlined, right? They were in the Western Conference Finals last year. They've been a force to reckon with. They have one of the highest scoring backcourts in the league for like 3 or 4 years running. All those reasons. So I actually do think it will be a good thing. I think it will catch their attention quickly. I think it will put them on notice very quickly. And I actually think it will help them as the playoffs move along, because they will be more battle-tested. I know people like, you know, there's the argument about, would you rather go through the path of least resistance or do you want to be forged through fire? I would rather be forged through fire than go through the path of least resistance, because I do think you're going to be tested a lot in the playoffs. And because of that, you want to have experience with those tests as quickly as possible.
Well, George, I'm no longer going to give any more updates on the Clippers. Dallas, I seem to jinx the. I don't think Dallas has scored since I gave that update. So
yeah, the Clippers are on a roll right now. And Paul George just took Porzingis to school on that play. And yeah, it's a 2-point game already. Yeah.
But this game makes no sense. It started off 10-0 Clippers. Then you looked up, and then the Dallas Mavs were up 14. And now it looks like they're going to be back down again. This game
today's
makes no
NBA.
Sense.
Yeah, that's how it works. You know, the three ball will get you back in quick. So, Alan, have a great show.
Appreciate
good
it, guys.
Good to talk
Thank
to you,
you,
buddy.
You too.
All right. See ya. There he is, Alan Sliwa. Laker Talk is coming up in just a couple of minutes. LZ, excellent
yes,
work as always.
Look at us. Right out the gate, it's like we weren't even broken up.
I know. Look at that. And by the way, tomorrow, I've got a great story for you. The ice cream truck song is being canceled.
What does that mean?
You know the song at the ice cream truck? You know what I'm saying?
Like Yeah.
Canceled. We're canceling it. I'll explain why tomorrow. Actually, Wednesday, because we're off tomorrow because of the Lakers. How about that for a tease? 2-day tease.
Oh, my God. I hope you remember it.
Yeah. I'll keep it up on I'll keep it up on the show sheet. How about that? All right. LZ, thank you very much. Thanks to LZ. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Greg. Thanks to Alan Sliwa for hanging out there. Clint Yates, Mark Spears, Lindsay Theory, you guys calling in and tuning in. Stay healthy. Stay safe. We love you. We'll talk to you Wednesday at 4 o'clock. See you.